Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Mark Perry, an author and historian specializing in military, foreign affairs, and intelligence analysis. His books include Conceived in Liberty, and his latest book is Talking to Terrorists, Why America Must Engage with Its Enemies. He's the recipient of both the 1995 National Jewish Book Award and the prestigious Project Censored Award. And his most recent article, Politico, is Why Americans Don't Win Wars Anymore. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mark Perry.
Good to be here.
And Mark, given that you're an historian of intelligence, it does seem that we are entering an era now where Donald Trump is, based upon his speech today before the Coast Guard Academy, is more or less sort of setting himself up as a victim of the deep state, that not only the press are going to do him in, but the intelligence world will also do him in, and that he's going to fight back and never give in. Do you think that there is a war between the White House and the deep state?
I'm a skeptic of the whole idea of a deep state. I mean, there's no question that if the president were to tomorrow morning not be president and Congress were not to meet, somehow the government would continue to chug on. There's no doubt about that. There are lifelong career people who run the American government who are not elected by anybody. But the idea that somehow there's a plot or a conspiracy or even meetings to kind of undo the president strikes me as almost naive. It doesn't happen. Earlier today when you and I talked, I was thinking through this a little bit, and I noticed to myself that when George W. Bush, Bush 43, came into office and really imposed a new way of thinking about foreign policy, one that I was not a fan of, the government turned on a dime. The careerists in the State Department and the intelligence agency really shifted to meet the needs and the thinking of the new president. And that can happen now. The president has enormous constitutional power if he knows how to use it. So this idea that there's kind of a deep state that is at war with Donald Trump and that we're in the middle of some kind of intergovernmental civil war strikes me as pretty superficial.
But he's a different president in the sense that, first of all, I don't see that he has much credibility because he says the most outrageous things. And, for example, his press secretary, who's obviously very beleaguered and might well be fired soon, Sean Spicer, he was literally sent out on his first day as the press secretary, as the spokesman for the president of the United States, to lie about the size of the inauguration crowd in a way that was just ludicrous. So they haven't gotten off to a good start in terms of credibility, surely.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I take your point and agree with it. The problem here isn't that Donald Trump has new and different and revolutionary ideas that the rest of us are having trouble adopting. The problem here is that the President of the United States, the man we elected, doesn't seem to have any ideas at all. And the question isn't one of, you know, our dislike of him because he represents something new and different. Our worry is that he's not competent. And that's an entirely different problem than an evil guy who's engaged in high crimes and misdemeanors. It's quite possible that Donald Trump fired James Comey without knowing the firestorm it would cause, that he just kind of shrugged off the Michael Flynn problem with Russia, that, you know, that he's acting like a normal American. That is to say, we don't get up in the morning and call a lawyer and have him escort us around all day to figure out, you know, what to say and what to do and what's right and what's wrong and what's legal and what's not. But that is, in many respects, what a president has to do. He has to be very careful, has to be very mindful of the law, and has to be aware that, you know, of the special interests that are involved here. And Donald Trump doesn't have any of that. He doesn't have any sense of that. That's a problem.
But interesting enough, when you just mentioned that, I thought, well, you know, his supporters out there don't think that there is a problem. They think that all this is inside the Beltway hysteria and the liberal media all in a lather, and that he's doing a great job, and they love him.
Yeah, I think it's. I know this is going to sound odd, maybe, and people will shake their heads at my lack of good information. But it's quite possible that Donald Trump will survive this crisis and that he'll run for president in 4 years and be reelected. There's still deep mistrust of Washington, of what people call the elites, of the established government bureaucracy, and people really want something new. And people might question Mr. Trump's competence, as I do, but he's certainly something new. And he gained strength through ad hoc attacks and, you know, the idea that he somehow colluded with the Russians to, and if he hadn't, Hillary Clinton would be president. I mean, it's just not true. On the face of it, doesn't make any sense. The person who lost the election was Hillary Clinton. The Democratic Party nominated the wrong person. That's why Donald Trump's president. Not because, you know, anybody paid attention to what the Russians were saying. Quite the opposite. So it's, you know, we are obviously in a very tenuous and dangerous position as a country. But this is a crisis in many respects of our own making.
And again, I'm speaking with Mark Perry, who is an author and historian specializing in military foreign affairs and intelligence analysis. His latest book is Talking to Terrorists, Why America Must Engage with Its Enemies. And his most recent article at Politico is Why Americans Don't Win Wars Anymore. We'll get to the not winning wars anymore, but in terms of his competence or lack of competence, if his supporters are going to stick with him, and he made an appeal to them today, clearly, at the Coast Guard Academy, I'm going to fight on and that the press are out to get me, and they hate the press at any rate. And I can, you know, quote you the latest Washington Post ABC poll, 89% of Trump supporters believe he's honest and trustworthy and will fulfill his campaign promises, and 78% of them believe that the mainstream media propagates fake news. So those are the alternative universes that we're dealing with here. But stuck in the middle is the Republican Congress. And how long do you think they're going to stick with him? Because he's making life uncomfortable for them, clearly.
Yes, he is. And it's a really good question. I wish I had a definite answer. I think that it's very clear that his support among the Republican leadership is eroding. But they're also looking at over their shoulder at this Washington Post poll and saying 89% of Trump supporters still support him. I think that maybe we're dealing with larger questions. I think that if Trump were to be forced from office, that would be, you know, people would be very satisfied and relieved that we don't, you know, Mike Pence is at least competent, but it would be a disaster for the country. It would absolutely alienate a large section of the populace who thought, well, you know, you can vote for somebody, and if you don't vote for who they want, the deep state or whoever, then they're gone. And the factor of alienating a large portion of the American public is something that I think that we ought to recoil from. Removing Trump from office is not a great idea. Helping him, if that's possible, and is the other alternative, you know, that we have. There aren't many people willing to do that, but there's a lot at stake here, including whether, you know, how we answer the question, is the United States now capable of governing itself or not? That's the real question. And the answer that I come up with, watching what's going on, is apparently not.
Well, but it seems to be a deeper problem, though. When you talk about Trump not being competent, which is pretty manifestly clear, there's also, and I think you can make the case that John McCain changed our politics by selecting Sarah Palin as his running mate, and she was clearly not competent. But the reason that I think they get support, both Trump and Palin, is that there is a kind of distrust of elites and a distrust of expertise. I mean, that explains these anti-vaxxers, you know, and all of these conspiracies out there, just that are anti-intellectual, anti-science. There's a lot of traction, and not to mention the fact that I think almost half of the population don't believe in evolution. So I guess my question would be, what will it take for Trump's people to recognize that he's just not up for the job?
Well, you bring up a good point, and I was going to mention it before. I'm glad you did. Tom Nichols in Foreign Affairs had a piece recently about the mistrust of experts and what that means. And I mean, I saw it firsthand. I had to travel for family reasons to Florida last week and sat down with people who are Trump supporters, and, you know, they're citing Judge Judy as a source for their beliefs, and how MS-13 is a Muslim gang, which it's not, because that's what they heard. And you kind of scratch your head at this. I mean, this is a huge problem, and, you know, family after family across this country have these arguments every night, I'm sure. You know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do about it? And it's going to take a while. It shows, I think, how our educational system has deteriorated. In the short term, I think the best that we can do, and what I try to do, is to just stand up and say, no, that's not the case. And argue it out. But we still have a requirement to listen to people who have different views. And we can't assume that just because, you know, New York, Philadelphia, Boston, and L.A. voted for Hillary Clinton that the country is progressive. We don't live in a progressive country. We live in a very conservative country. And we have to embrace that and understand it, and understand that, you know, people who support Trump are, you know, they might be supporting an incompetent president, but they have a legitimate, incredible point of view. Mistrust of Washington is widespread, and there's good reason for it.
And that's clearly why he got elected. I mean, you couldn't have had a candidate that represented the status quo than Hillary Clinton, right?
Yeah, well, you know how I feel about this, and I know how you feel. The way I think about this is, you know, those people who voted for Franklin Roosevelt, the poor, the workers, the small shopkeepers, the farmers, all of those people who voted for the New Deal and progressivism voted for Donald Trump this time. And all of those small shopkeepers and workers and all those people on Bunker Hill, they voted for Donald Trump. And all those on Lexington Green, they voted for Donald Trump, too. The Tories, the elites, the banking community, they voted for Hillary Clinton. So, you know, when Hillary came out yesterday and said, well, I'm establishing a foundation to support progressive causes, my first thought was, well, you're not a progressive. And that to me, was the real betrayal of the last election. I feel so, like many Americans who view themselves as progressives, I just feel betrayed and disaffected by what's going on. But still, you know, I was still adamantly pounding the table and say, listen, this man's our president. Let's try to help him, because doing contrary to that was really going to be harmful to the country. We've had 5 months now of all the oxygen is out of the room. Nothing's been getting done, and it's going to go on. It could go on for 4 years, and the country just can't afford it.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, I wanted to talk about your article at Politico, Why Americans Don't Win Wars Anymore. We haven't won a war since World War II, and we spend more on defense than anybody else by a factor of something, I don't know. I think we spend more on defense than the seven other countries combined, most of whom are allies. And now they're just upping it to $54 billion extra on top of what, bringing it up to about $600 billion. And $54 billion extra that Trump's asked for is the equivalent of the annual defense expenditure for Russia. So it's an amazing situation that you can keep spending more money but not really be able to even articulate the threat. I mean, we can't even figure out what to call the main enemy, which are these ragtag bunch of guys driving around in pickup trucks in the middle of the desert. You know, are they Islamic State? Are they ISIS? Are they ISIL? I mean, it doesn't seem to matter anymore whether we have an enemy or who the enemy is, and it doesn't seem to matter anymore whether we win wars.
Yeah, everything you just said, I agree with. I think that in light of our previous discussion about how people question experts and 50% of the people don't buy into evolution, it's irresponsible for the United States to be spending $630 billion on the Pentagon. It's just absolutely irresponsible. They say, well, you know, the more money, the more security. Well, that's not true. In fact, just the opposite might be true. And, you know, ISIS is a problem, but it is not going to gnaw away at the foundations of our civilization, undermine our democratic principles. It's just not. I think that what we're faced with is not winning, but this kind of, you know, good enough that the wars we fight now, the end state will be, well, it's good enough. You know, we can't win in Afghanistan, but we can leave a stable government there and keep terrorist groups from launching attacks on us, and that's good enough. The same in Iraq and ISIS. Well, it's good enough. But I think that we have to start questioning the premises of whether these kinds of deployments overseas are a good idea to begin with. And having spent $4.75 trillion since 2001, since September 11th, and to not have won, or to not even have left in place a good enough government that would be a help to us, that's a real problem. And I think, you know, it's, I hope that there will be a national debate. There hasn't been. There will be a national debate on whether this money is wasted and what we do, what kind of national strategy we should adopt going forward. Because this constant spending on defense just isn't working.
Right. And just to finish up, though, it would seem that if you spent maybe a sixth of that or a tenth of that, you know, $100 billion more on education, you would get over the problems that we talked about earlier, which is obviously the biggest problem we face internally is that there is no consensus anymore in this country about what is real and what is true.
That's right. And I'm sure I do what you do every night. I sit in my chair, I watch the news reports, and I just shake my head. Mm-hmm. You know, and I turn to my wife and I say, well, that's not true, or, well, that's not the whole story, or, well, you know, and it goes on and on and on, you know.
Right.
And we're in a really, I think that's why this time is so dangerous. You know, it's bad enough that we're threatened by nuclear missiles by Russia when we shouldn't have to be. It's that, there seems to be a kind of a sense among the American people that our national project is unraveling, and we've got to get a grip on this.
Well, Mark Perry, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Mark Perry. He's an author and historian specializing in military foreign affairs and intelligence analysis. His latest book is Talking to Terrorists, Why America Must Engage with Its Enemies. And his most recent article, Politico, is Why Americans Don't Win Wars Anymore.